Welcome to Cafe of Delights, conversations that enlighten and inspire with me, your host, Gail West. We are at the precipice of one of the most exciting evolutions in human history. From science to spirituality, culture, arts, cutting-edge psychotherapies, new economies, and more. We will explore how to create a world where all can thrive. In a series of riveting interviews, you'll have the opportunity to hear from those that are actively working at the edges of local, regional, and global transformation. Join me, your host and author of the book Money Come Dance With Me, Gail West, to be inspired, delighted, and filled with hope for a new reality. Cafe of Delights starts now. Hello, I'm so excited to have John Perkins as my guest today. And John is the former economic hitman who advised, John Perkins is a former chief economist who advised the World Bank, United Nations, Fortune 500 corporations, and governments around the world. Now sought after as speaker and author of 11 books that have been on the New York Times bestseller list for more than 70 weeks, sold more than 2 million copies, and are translated into more than 35 languages. He exposes the world of international intrigue and corruption and the economic hitman strategy that creates global empires. His latest book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, third edition, China's Economic Hitman Strategy, Ways to Stop the Global Takeover, continues his revelations, describes China's highly effective and dangerous modifications to the Economic Hitman Strategy, and offers a plan for transforming a failing death economy into a regenerative, successful life economy. You can learn more at johnperkins.org, Economic Hitman Book. I'm so excited to have you, John.
Welcome. Great to be with you, Gail. It's wonderful. It's been a while, but we've traveled. It seems like we've traveled around the world together.
Yeah, Ecuador, Colombia, Guatemala. We've been around the world and back.
Yes.
So I'd like to start with the same question I ask everybody, and that is, what brings you hope, and what delights your soul at this time?
Well, what brings me hope? I continue to travel around the world a lot. I'm speaking at three big events in Europe this summer, beginning in a couple of days in the Czech Republic. And as you know, I spend a lot of time in Latin America and elsewhere. And everywhere I go, I see that people truly are raising their consciousness. They're waking up to the fact that we must change, that we do live on that precipice that you mentioned earlier. And people are really getting it now like never before. You know, 10 years ago, I might have to convince audiences that there was climate change. You don't have to convince anybody of that anymore, or most, or almost anybody. So I'm very hopeful that all over the world, and including in China, and people in Russia, not necessarily the government, but people in all over the world, our understanding that we are facing an existential crisis on this planet, and we are at a time of tremendous opportunity for change to evolve into a new perception, a new goal of what it means to be human beings being on this planet. You know, people are really getting it.
It's exciting. And what about what brings you delight, since this is the Cafe of Delights?
Well, all of that. You know, I love to write. So my greatest delight in life really is writing. It's like a meditation for me. It's a vacation for me. But I also take great delight in the fact that we're doing this program. This is delightful. And the many opportunities to meet with people and speak with people and speak out about this transformation period that we're going through. I find this a delightful time to be alive. I feel very, very blessed to be alive at this incredible time in human history. I think we should all feel blessed.
It is an incredible time. And if you really look around, you can see that there is change, there is caring, there are people who are awake and in action. That's what's so exciting. I think that around the world, there actually is more of an awakening that I see than I see in the United States, and that's really exciting too. So I'm just going to Europe, and the people that are care that care a lot. We have to connect as a community, as a global community, for the yes. for the world. Yeah, and it's happening.
It is happening, and despite the distractions, the war in Ukraine is a huge distraction right now from this greater issue. The pandemic was a distraction. There's a lot of distractions, and yet we continue to evolve and understand the necessity to understand that, yes, there are many challenges, but those challenges create tremendous opportunities.
So I know that some people may know a lot about you, and some people may know not anything about you, but I'd like to have you share the origin story of your journey in life, starting with how did you become an economic hitman?
Good question. You know, so
you have many stories. I've heard a lot of them.
You know the story, but some people may not. I grew up in rural New Hampshire, the son of a boys' private school teacher, I was surrounded by very, very wealthy boys all my life. And yet my family had no money. The school gave us a house and food. We weren't suffering, but my dad got almost no pay, a little bit. And I heard all these remarkable stories from other countries, kids that grew up in Buenos Aires or Paris or Istanbul or travel there during vacations. And here I was stuck in this little New Hampshire town. So I had a really strong desire to go to these other places and to make money, to have some power. So after my last year in business school in Boston, I was interviewed by the National Security Agency, put through lie detector tests, and they offered me a job. But at the same time, I had an opportunity to join the Peace Corps. And what I was trying to do was avoid the draft. I did not believe in the Vietnam War. I was determined not to go. But I also, I loved my country, and I didn't, well, I wasn't ready to go to Canada or jail. And the Peace Corps then offered this opportunity to do something that I thought might be worthwhile. I was sent to Ecuador, especially deep into the Amazon rainforest in Ecuador, where I lived with Shuar people, indigenous people. And that was really the beginning of a tremendous transformation in my life. And while I was still there, my last of 3 years, I was interviewed, or I met a man who was a senior vice president at a big consulting firm. And ultimately, he offered me a job as an economist for this consulting firm. I quickly rose to chief economist. That's really the story. But and truly, what my job was to be an economic hitman. Chief mm-hmm. economist was a fancy title for kind of a henchman for corporations. I didn't see it as that at the time. You know, what we're taught in, but my job, well, I don't know how much you want me to go into, Gail. I don't want to keep talking.
Keep talking. Because it's like you say the economic hitman, but a lot of people don't know what that is. And a lot of people are not aware of what we're doing around the world.
Yeah.
And they don't know, because a lot of this is secret.
Well, it's secret, and then again it's not so secret, but it's misleading because my job was to identify countries that had resources that corporations wanted, like in those days, oil. Today it tends to be lithium and copper, and still is oil. Then to arrange a huge loan to that country that had these resources from the World Bank or one of its sister organizations. However, the money never went to the country. The country was on the hook for it. It had to use its resources collateral, sign off on a loan, and the money went to a U.S. corporation to build big infrastructure projects in that country, things like electric power grids, highways, airports, ports, industrial parks. And what you could show when you invested this money in these things, it made huge profits for our corporations, first of all, but you also showed that the GDP would increase. So I was trained in business school, and the World Bank still promotes this, and so do business schools, that that reflects the growth in GDP reflects prosperity for the entire country. And so I was convinced that what I was doing for the first years, many years of this, was that a good thing. But over time, I began to see the gross domestic product truly only measures what, how well the wealthy are doing and big corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So money was being diverted from healthcare and education and other social services to pay the interest on these loans that this country had signed off on. And mm-hmm. the loans were being used to build projects that benefited the people who owned businesses and industries, the wealthy people. They yeah. benefited from more electricity and highways and ports and airports. The majority of the people were suffering because money was diverted, as I said, from social services. And in the end, the country couldn't pay its loans, almost always. And so we'd go back, usually in the guise of the International Monetary Fund, and we'd say, hey, you know, since you can't pay your loans, sell your oil or whatever resource real cheap to our corporations without any environmental or social regulation, or very few. Privatize your public sector businesses, your water and sewage systems and all the others, and sell them dirt cheap to our investors. Vote with us at the next United Nations vote against Cuba or whatever, and allow us to build military bases on your soil. And these were the trade-offs when the country couldn't pay its debt, which, mm-hmm. you know, and it was not, these projects did not raise people out of poverty. They were, you know, they did not measure the prosperity of the country. GDP measures how well the rich are doing and the big corporations are doing.
Well, that's fascinating because that is happening around the world, and the idea of the haves and have-nots is growing a
yeah.
lot. So
indeed.
When I think about people having billions and billions of dollars as their net worth, and then you get somebody who's making in the United States $10 an hour and can barely feed their children, there's something wrong with that picture.
Yes, since that time that I was an economic hitman in the 70s, it's really gotten worse. The inequality has grown. The real average wage, a minimum wage in the United States, when you account for inflation, has not increased since the mid 70s.
Wow.
We had the same, even though the numbers have increased, but we had tremendous inflation too during that period.
Mm-hmm.
So the real average wage in this country has not increased since the 70s, but the number of billionaires have. I mean, back in the 70s, I don't know that the word billionaires, we counted in the millions back then. Now it's the billions. And the wealth in corporations that often don't pay any taxes in the United States, they benefit from all the services they receive from our education system, from the transportation system, communication system. All of these things, these corporations and wealthy investors in these corporations benefit from, and yet they don't pay their fair share of the taxes in many, many cases. It's a tragedy. And
yeah.
it's part of what we call the death economy, which is what I, as an economic hitman, and all the other people who were doing the same kind of work as me, helped to promote.
So you wrote a book called The World Is As You Dream It, right?
Correct.
So, and we were talking about dreaming a new world. Can you talk a little bit about more? Because I know that besides being an economic hitman, you also have training as a shaman.
Yeah, which is probably one of the reasons why I came to understand that the idea I was selling to the world, that I was promoting, was a lie about, mm-hmm. you know, GDP, et cetera. You know, what we know, Gail, and what the shamans taught me way back in the late 60s when I was in the Peace Corps in the Amazon, was that our perceptions mold our reality. And I learned this through an experience when I was almost dying in the Amazon. I was dying in the Amazon, and the shaman healed me, and it was through a change of perception. And I came to understand that this idea that perception molds reality is the basis for modern psychotherapy. It's the basis for quantum physics. It's the basis for politics, for marketing. It basically everything. There is no United States you know, there's no Russia and there's no culture, no religion, except as we perceive these things.
Right.
And when enough people accept a perception and are codified into law, it has a huge impact on reality. The idea that the world is as you dream it. So the indigenous people I was living with as a Peace Corps volunteer, the Shwa, they talk about the dream, that they're a dream culture. But for them, the dream is what we would call perception. It's both. There's a nighttime dream, but that's a perception too. And what they actually feel is that in the nighttime, that's a reality. And part of what we're living on a day-to-day basis is a dream that's molded by the reality of our perceptions. It gets a little complicated. But the fact of the matter is that the idea that the world is as you dream it really means that the world is as we perceive it. Mm-hmm. And so if we perceive that the goal is to maximize short-term profits for corporations, which is what our economic system now says, and to maximize materialistic consumption for everyone else, which seems to be, you know, what a lot of us have bought into. If that's our perception, it molds a reality that is now becoming a self-destructive reality, a death economy that's consuming and polluting itself and depleting its resources and basically headed toward self-destruction. It's all based on a perception, and that's the good news, because all we got to do is change the perception and we change the reality.
So we're going to take a break in a moment, and when I come back, I'd like to go into more about this idea of the dream, because this morning I was at a meeting where we were talking about climate change and climate activism, and everybody was depressed and despairing. And as we hold that energy of depression and despairing, that's the dream that we're holding also. So if you don't have power and you feel powerless, then how do we shift that? I'd love to go back into that and talk about how do we change that dream as a collective, because we're more powerful than we think.
Yeah. Do you want to start that now, or are we taking a break?
We're going to take a break let's take a break.
Imagine if you were truly flourishing, how would your financial expansion impact the world? Author of Money Come Dance With Me, Gail West, is an internationally known speaker, creative catalyst, and business intuitive at Success With Soul. Work with Gail to create a new relationship with money as your friend. Link the soul of your business to the business of your soul with programs like Sacred Money Mastery, Akashic Records of the Soul, and more. To receive a healing money meditation, go to successwithsoul.com today.
Cafe of Delight. Conversations that enlighten and inspire with me, your host, Gail West. Tune into TransformationTalkRadio.com every second and fourth Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific. We are at the precipice of one of the most exciting evolutions in human history. On Cafe of Delights, you will hear from those that are actively working at the edges of local, regional, and global transformation. For more information on hope for a new reality, visit Gail West at SuccessWithSoul.com. Hello, this is Gail West, and we're back. I'm here with my friend and amazing John Perkins, who wrote The Economic Hitman, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which sold more than 2 million copies, right? And was on the New York Times, a lot more, right? It's on the New York Times bestseller list for 70 weeks, amazingly. We've been talking about climate change and some other things, so when we were at a break, you were talking more about how you think that that's actually a gift, right? Let's go into more than that, because a lot of people are really despairing about it and kind of frozen.
Well, the despair comes from our reluctance to reimagine this whole thing and take actions on the reimagining. So the reason I say it's a gift is because it's shaking us awake. This death economy, you know, is a terrible thing. It's created deep inequalities around the world. It's created tremendous suffering all over the planet. We in the United States and many other higher income countries, we don't seem to even really understand the huge problems that our system has created. And climate change is shaking us awake to those problems, and the Mother Earth is speaking to us.
Yep,
she's saying we got to change. And it's not just climate change, and the plants are speaking to us. You know, people are getting into plant medicines and herbal medicines and vegetarianism, and you know, the plants are speaking loud and clear too. They're burning themselves up in huge fires. They're flooding. They're getting being flooded. This planet is truly speaking to us. And as the Quechua shaman, who I think you met, Gail, Maria Juana Yambarala up in the Andes, you know, she one time said, you know, we humans are just like so many fleas on Pachamama, Mother Earth. And if we get to be too much of a nuisance, she'll just shake us all off. And then she pointed at Imbabura, this volcano that's next to her house, which hovers above her home, this beautiful sacred volcano. And she said, you know, it's 20 years ago, that volcano had a large ice cap on it. It doesn't anymore. Pachamama is twitching. She hasn't shaken us off yet, but she's prepared to. She's twitching. We need to listen. And then Maria Juana smiles and laughs, and so she does. She's amazing. And she said, well, just her name is amazing, isn't it? Maria Juana.
Yeah, Maria Juana. Yeah, right.
And she says, ah, what a great time to be alive and to have the opportunity to listen to the earth speaking. And I think that's how we need to look at this. We're very blessed to be alive at this time.
Right.
But we need to change our perception. And part of that change means that we stop, you know, fretting about what might have been or what we've done in the past. And instead, we really look toward what can we do to change this? And it's moving from a perception of maximization of materialism, maximization of short-term materialism, short-term profits, short-term consumption, and looking at the long-term. What do we do that will best serve future generations of all species, not just human, but of all species? And what an exciting time to be alive and be in a position to do this. But we need to take hope. You know, you can look at two paths when you're at a position here that things need to change. You can despair. You can say there's nothing I can do about it, and that's a perception that'll create a reality. Nothing happens. Things continue to get bad. Or you can take the perception as, yes, I can make things happen. We all have tremendous power, a lot more power than we realize, Gail. All of us, we're consumers. Many of us are workers, or we're employed by these companies. Yep. Or we may be managers and investors. So if we take this optimistic path that we can change, if we have that perception, we move into a reality that in fact creates change. History has shown this over and over and over again. We've been through many crises throughout history. My grandmother used to talk about how, you know, people thought the world was coming to an end with World War I, and then the Great Depression, and the 1918 influenza, and
that killed 50 million people, didn't it? That was.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
And then World War II. And, right. You know, I mean, we've gone through amazing times when things look very, very bad, but people managed to reperceive how to look at these things.
Well, you know, a lot of people think that, well, I'm just one person. What can I do? And we don't, what you're talking about is recognizing the power of our thoughts, recognizing the power of our perception. But how do we, this meeting that I was in was a meeting of psychotherapists, and like feeling that you have to go down into this despair place and hang out there because, you know, maybe hope is elusive. Like, and I'm going, wait a minute, look around, see that things are changing. You gotta look for it. If you look for it, you'll see it. But there is a way that so many people say, well, what can I do? I'll put my plastic bottle in the recycle bin, and I'll carry my water bottle, and, you know, whatever. I'll drive my Prius. But then that's it, you know, like how do we as a collective shift? So we're talking about changing the dream.
Yeah. Well, I think you ask people that express discouragement to think of a hero, somebody that they look at as a hero. You know, that could be Martha Washington or George Washington, or it could be Rosa Parks or the Dalai Lama, you know, whoever it is, look to a hero. Let's take Rosa Parks. You know, she got, became a member of the movement to do away with the extreme white prejudice in the South. But she was just a human being. And when she got started doing this, she had no idea she was going to become famous. You know, that we'd be talking about her now, long afterwards. She had no idea. She walked to the back, she walked to the front of a bus. And she'd done a few other things. She prepared for this, but that's basically what she did. A little action that changed, that reached the world. And we can recite these things over and over. You know, anybody who's listening, just pick a hero and think about where they had started. We all get started someplace. I like to tell people that there's kind of a five-step approach on an individual basis. And I don't know whether, I'm happy to share that, but I don't know whether this is the right time to do it or
yeah,
not.
Go ahead. So, because we're talking about shifting from a death economy to a life economy, and climate change is one form of a life economy.
Yes, it's a symptom. It's a symptom. So species extinctions, environmental degradation, environmental destruction,
right,
inequality. These are problems, but they're not the problem. They're symptoms of the problem, which is this death economy.
Right, right.
And, you know, I think, so if we can, there's five questions we can all ask ourselves, and I suggest people do this frequently. And, you know, it's in my latest book, the third volume of the trilogy of Confessions of an Economic Hitman, third edition. But if people want to go into more detail, but this is the essence of it, that you ask yourself, what do I most want to do for the rest of my life? What will bring me the greatest satisfaction? And I would answer that by saying, I want to write. I love to write, Gail. I love to write. Even I write a lot of things that never get published. That's okay. I just love to write. It's like a meditation. And I have a friend who's a carpenter, and he likes to work with his hands and wood. That's what he wants. It's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum from a writer, you know? And the second question we ask ourselves is, how can I do this in a way that'll help transform the death economy into a life economy? And I would answer that by saying, I'm going to write about things that expose the system and inspire people to make these changes.
Right.
And my carpenter friend would say, I'm going to only use sustainable materials. But that'll work. That's part of the process. And the third question is, what's blocking you? What's stopping you? What's standing in your way? And a writer might say, well, I know I got to write every day if I you know, want to be successful. I just don't have time. And my carpenter friend might say, well, my clients don't want to pay the extra price for sustainable materials. And so the fourth question is, what happens when I reach out and touch that blockage? What the Schwa would say, which is the title of another one of my books, touch the jaguar.
Touching the jaguar, right.
Yeah. So you see a jaguar standing in front of you, stopping you. It's the blockage. What's blocking you from doing what you most want to do for the rest of your life in a way that'll, you know, create a life economy? And so as I look at that as a writer and say, well, wait, I say I don't have enough time to write, but I could turn off the television for an hour or two every night and write. And that would give me, you know, another 7 to 14 hours a week, which is actually quite a lot for a writer. My carpenter friend would say, well, I'll tell my clients that if there's an extra price associated with sustainable materials, it's not a cost, it's an investment in the future,
right,
for them and their children. And then the fifth question is, what actions do I take? Writer, I have to write. You know, I have to get up and write. And my carpenter friend has to build a cabinet like this one out of sustainable materials and spread the word. Tell his clients. Tell them, we're using sustainable materials to build your house or this cabinet or whatever, because you're investing in the future for all of us. It's an investment. It's an important investment. And so, you know, I suggest to people that they ask themselves these questions frequently. It only takes 5 minutes. I do it almost every morning. You know, the first one is, what do I most want to do for the rest of my life? What will bring me the greatest satisfaction? Two, how do I do this in a way that helps transform the death economy to a life economy? Three, what's standing in my way? What's blocking me? Four, when I change my perception about the blockage, how does that change my view of reality? And And five, what actions do I take? And, you know, when we all do this, it also has a collective impact. And so there are people that will only do, you know, what they might consider a small part. But even when you shop consciously, when you refuse to buy those blue jeans that were made by a company that doesn't give a damn about the environment, and instead you buy them from another company that does, that's working toward, no companies are perfect, nobody's perfect, but that's working toward a better future. You send an email to the company that you didn't buy from and tell them why you didn't. And you send an email to the company you did and let them know. And then you send those emails out to all your social networking circles. Ask them to send them to all their social networking circles. And so it's not just a matter of how you shop. It's a matter of getting the word out. And in this day and age of social networks, it's really easy to keep getting this information out.
Right.
And it has an impact. You may think that, oh, if I just buy this kind of blue jeans, what impact is that going to have? Or if I stop drinking water out of a plastic bottle and instead have a bottle that I constantly carry around with me, what impact does that have? Well, if you get the message out as well as doing that, it can have a huge impact. An impact that you don't even know what kind of an impact it has. We know, don't we, when we do these things, sometimes this impact is huge that we may not know it. That's okay. Maybe it's better. You know, Buddhists say, if you do a good deed and you brag about it, that's a problem. If you do a good deed and you don't tell anybody about it, you've really done a good deed and the message gets out.
So if you think about, like, if you say, well, this one bottle isn't going to make a difference, but if, you know, 1,000 people say if this bottle isn't going to make a difference and 100,000 people say this bottle isn't going to make a difference, that's a lot of bottles.
Yeah. And if everybody spreads the word, it does make a difference.
It does. Yeah. So it's about our individual choices and recognizing that our choices have power.
Yeah.
And that, what were you going to say?
I have a friend who said that years ago, she decided she wanted to look good to her neighbors. So she hung her wet clothes after that she'd washed them on her, used a washing machine, but she didn't use a dryer. And she lived in California, a place where you could do this, and hung them out on the line and thought, well, this looks like I'm being very environmental. And she would talk up the storm. And she said, really, what I was doing was greenwashing. But because she did that, she started changing her perception. That one act took her to new perceptions and new perceptions. And she ended up being a person who designs changing the dream programs for Pachamama Alliance. And these have reached, I think, 87 countries at this point. So, you know, that step of hanging out of garbage took her a long ways further into having a much bigger impact. We don't know sometimes what kind of impacts these things are going to have.
Yeah, and it's a collective impact. And we're recognizing that we are an incredibly creative species. We created this problem. We can uncreate it. We can change it. And that's
it's all
so
perception.
It's all
perception. And then taking the actions around the perception. The actions have to follow our perceptions. But,
right. Yeah. Because if you don't take action, it doesn't. Nothing's happening.
You know, years ago, I took a group of people, 33 of us, and we ended up talking to Ladakh, northern India, what used to be Tibet. And we ended up meeting with the Dalai Lama in his house in northern India. And we spent an afternoon in his living room with him. And one of the people asked him, they said, you know, there's some famous writer someplace in the world, I can't remember the details, but who's calling on all of us to pray for peace at a certain hour and a certain day for everybody around the world to pray for peace. What do you think of that, Your Holiness? And the Dalai Lama said, well, praying is good, meditating and dreaming on peace, that's good. But if it's all you do, it's not enough, and it may actually be self-defeating. Because if you pray for peace, you meditate on peace, and you walk away and say, I've done my job, that's bad. You've got to take action. Pray for peace, but you've also, and he likes to use the expression, you have to take daily action.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I think that was a great, you know, and he's a great example of that. This guy meditates every day for hours, and then he goes out and writes books and gives speeches around the world and takes a lot of actions.
Yeah. So it's about action. So we have a few minutes left before we take another break. I'd like to for you to describe, we've talked about death economy, you kind of know what that is, but describe what is your perception of a life economy?
A life economy will pay people to clean up pollution, to mine the plastic in the oceans, for example, is one of many examples, and to regenerate destroyed environments, to plant trees where forests have been destroyed, to help to revitalize coral reefs, and on and on and on, and to pay people to recycle and to work in the recycling business and to develop the new technologies like solar and wind and ones we haven't even dreamed of yet that don't destroy the earth, that don't ravage the earth, but instead serve long-term interests in life. So a life economy is not about not being able to grow. I do not like it when people say we've got to stop growth. Well, yes, we have to stop growth in the way we've been growing. But if you're starving, you don't want to see growth of food coming your way to stop. You want to learn how to grow food, and that's growth. And so we need to grow in a new way.
Yeah.
And that can be very, you know, we can pay people to do that. This is not about returning to living in caves. This is about growth in new ways, growth in ways that preserve the earth, that regenerate the earth, that revitalize lives on this planet, that bring animals that are on the verge of extinction back from extinction. There's so many things that we can do. And there's absolutely no reason why our government shouldn't pay us to do that instead of in the United States, for example, which has a military budget as large as 10 or 12 of the next largest countries. Let's divert some of that to paying people to do some of these good things. And I think there's a huge role for private business in this area too. I'm all for that. And, you know, we've seen the miracle of solar and wind that 20 years ago, people said that will never be economical. It'll never replace fossil fuels. It's doing it.
Yeah. So it's really looking at how do we grow in a way that's sustainable, that's life affirming for all, not just human beings, but for all creation.
Yes. And that reverses damage we've done.
Right.
And, you know, there's so many, many opportunities to do that.
Yeah.
So many opportunities.
So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to go a little bit more into the latest book, about China, Ekanep Kibben, version 3. And so again, this is Gail West. I'm your host, and I have with me John Perkins.
Imagine if you were truly flourishing, how would your financial expansion impact the world? Author of Money Come Dance With Me, Gail West is an internationally known speaker, creative catalyst, and business intuitive at Success with Soul. Work with Gail to create a new relationship with money as your friend. Link the soul of your business to the business of your soul with programs like Sacred Money Mastery, Akashic Records of the Soul, and more. To receive a healing money meditation, go to successwithsoul.com today.
Cafe of Delight. Conversations that enlighten and inspire with me, your host, Gail West. Tune into TransformationTalkRadio.com every second and fourth Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific. We are at the precipice of one of the most exciting evolutions in human history. On Cafe of Delights, you will hear from those that are actively working at the edges of local, regional, and global transformation. For more information on hope for a new reality, visit Gail West at SuccessWithSoul.com. Hello, this is Gail West, and we're back with John Perkins, my guest, and we've been talking about how to dream a new dream, a dream of a life economy that's sustainable and healthy for all, how to heal the planet, how to create a new reality for our world. And John, I'd like for you to go a little bit more into, we've been mentioned a little bit about your new book. Which is the about China, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, version 3. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, and then how do people connect with you?
Yeah, well, how people connect with me, johnperkins.org. That's the best way to get started.
Easy.
Yeah, and sign up for my newsletter. Yeah, there's a little box where you can put your email, and it's only once a month, but you know, that keeps you connected with me because I speak at a lot of places. And as you know, Gail, I take people to visit the shamans in the Amazon and Colombia and Guatemala, and all that information is at johnperkins.org.
O-R-G.
I'm not commercial. I'm organic.
Yeah. And I have to say, having been on three of your amazing trips, the first one in Ecuador, vomiting on a banana leaf, more like retching. And then the Kogi shamans in Colombia, the Mayan shamans in Guatemala. If you get a chance to travel with John, you will be transformed in many, many ways. So please look into that. And you're doing work in Costa Rica also.
Yes, I teach in Costa Rica every year, and that's on the website. And I think we probably mentioned to people that the reason you were vomiting on that banana leaf is not because we don't give you healthy food, because we do. No, people don't get sick on our trips from that. It's because you've taken a sacred plant, ayahuasca, which wants you to purge. That was part of the process, right? That wasn't that you get sick on my trip. I don't want people to think that.
I was purging a lot.
As the shaman would tell you, you're getting healthy, not getting sick. You're not sick, you're getting healthy.
Yeah,
it's only for a couple hours, right? Or less.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
It was anyway, this coming January, I've got a trip to the Amazon, and it's getting close to full, but it isn't quite full yet. We never take more than 15 people. And one to Guatemala and Costa Rica. All of those are in January coming up. I get away from rainy Washington State during those months. So my website, johnperkins.org, all the information's there. Anyhow, so what was the second part of that question? Life economy. What? Where were we?
I was asking you, we've talking about the life economy and that what you need to do is take action, the five questions you'd ask. But you have a latest book, right? When did get published?
Right. So China, it just came out a couple of months ago. I taught at an MBA program in China a few years back. And what I realized at the very beginning is these very bright students who had been singled out to be the future leaders of China, they were all members of the Communist Party. They were asking me questions to find out what I did that was successful as an economic hitman and what mistakes I made, because they wanted to be better at it. And in fact, China has gotten much better at it than we have, better, much more efficient, let's say. I don't know if better is the right word to use here. So today, it's not when will China take over the world. China is the number one investor and trading partner in 25 countries now, and the United States versus the United States is 50 something. They've really taken over, and there's a lot of it's because of the mistakes we've made around the world. We've pissed off a lot of people with some of our policies, and China's stepped into the vacuum, and it has an amazing story to tell. You know, China brought more than 800 million people out of poverty since the 1970s, and it had economic growth of about 10% a year for 30 years. Nobody else has done anything to compare. So if you're the president of a Latin American or African country, you very strongly consider that model, because it works, and they have an amazing story to tell. At the same time, they are doing basically the same thing. It's an economic hitman strategy that's contributing to the death economy. And so we've got these two huge countries together. We create almost half the world's GDP, and we create about the same amount of the world's pollution. And so it's the premise of my book is that we've got to come together. We can disagree on everything else, but let's agree that we cannot continue with this death economy, because it serves nobody's interests. And, you know, we've got corporations that are very much involved in China, and they're very much involved in the United States and other places. they kind of bridge. So I think there's tremendous opportunities here. And one of the other things that the students in China told me, they said, you know, we created an economic miracle here, but we also lived through terrible pollution, like nothing you in the United States have ever experienced. We've had to experience air that you can't breathe. Mm. We don't want that for our kids. So we've shown that we can create an economic miracle at a horrible price, a horrible cost, environmentally and socially. So now we're going to turn that around and be the greenest country on the planet. And China's kind of in the process of doing that. They still build coal plants, but they also build more solar and wind than anybody else by far. And, you know, I came back to the United States after that trip, and I was speaking at a big convention of United States MBA students that happened to be held in Cornell that year. It was about 2,000 MBA students. And I told them what the Chinese students had said. And I said, don't you let that happen. Let the United States be number one. Let's have a World Cup competition every year to see what country has done the most to create a life economy. So I think that, you know, what we have to understand here is that what China and the United States are doing when they talk about their antagonism in the world, when it's this clashing of things, is distracting from what we ought to be doing together. Mm. I'm encouraged in the last few days by the rapprochement that the United States and China seem to be trying to make by, you know, this current administration making ties with China, but at the same time saying China's a kind of an enemy, and we have to impose more and more sanctions. It's a tough situation. And I think it's what's terribly important is to recognize that the people, forget the governments for a moment, but the people in both these countries and all over understand that the biggest problem that we're facing today is this existential one of all the symptoms of the death economy: climate change, species extinctions, forest fires, all kinds of fires, droughts, hurricanes, rising oceans. Those are all symptoms of a death economy. And if China and the United States can't agree that we're going to end this competition where there are no winners on a dead planet, then, you know, we're in deep trouble. And there's a perception of people in both of our countries that needs to change, and keep pushing our governments and our corporations to change.
You know, I lived in China for quite a while, so I'm very familiar with the Chinese culture. And you know, I think some of it is it's a lot of the media that we don't want China to be bigger than us. So if we make them the enemy, they're not going to be bigger than us. But and China has done a lot to bring people up, because a lot of what China, the culture of China, is about harmony. They want harmony, and it's about the collective good in many ways. But you know, there are the billionaires who are part of the Communist Party. But when they recognize that when there's not collective good and you have farmers that are not doing well, that that produces disharmony.
Yeah. The Confucian ideal of, you know, it's very, very important. And that's another thing they sell to the world. It's not about rugged individualism, which we try to sell. No. It's about connection. And they, you know, they tout this new Silk Road, which they say, you know, unlike us, we say, well, listen, we'll have a most favored nation relationship with you in Nigeria or Peru or Ecuador, where you have most favored nations trading policies with us in the United States. China says, no, we don't. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking to connect you with everybody around the world. We're going to help you build ports, build a new Silk Road. It's, you know, it's a very, very interesting time. Gail, I like to think of it, maybe I know we're getting close to the end of the hour. So if there was a huge fleet of UFOs hovering above us, threatening to attack us, what would China and the United States do?
Yeah.
Well, history
they
says
together.
They come together, just as Germany and Japan, who were our enemies during World War II, we all came together to oppose the Soviet Union. And so I think it's time that we recognize that we are the aliens. We've alienated ourselves from our planet. We've said we are apart from, not like the indigenous people tell us, a part of our planet. And that means we're aliens.
Yeah.
But it's not human beings, it's our perception of what it means to be successful human beings as we perceive it right now. So let's understand that the aliens are here, they've arrived, and we need to combat them. China needs to combat, you know, we need to come together to combat this attitude that's fostering a perception that's making us take actions that are destroying the planet as we know it.
Well, so I did a lot of work around healing trauma of money, but then I realized that the bigger issue was our definition of success based on consumption and who has value and who doesn't have value. And those are two things that we really need to think about. Like, how do we as a whole, if we hold money as evil, as opposed to it can be an agent for collaboration and generosity. That's also a perception. If we shift the perception of success that as those who are actively bringing peace to the world, they're actively doing something that is sustainable, that brings their gifts to the world, that's a whole different definition of success than what we have.
Absolutely. That's it. You just summed it up beautifully. And I just encourage everybody to feel that we all live in this blessed time when we have the opportunity to do exactly that.
Yeah. It's so we have 2 minutes left. Any last words, any last things that you want to say to people?
Well, I think that's it. You know, like, let's all understand that we're blessed to be alive right now at this huge moment in human history, like no other. I mean, there's been amazing moments throughout human history, but none where we're so threatened life as we know it on this planet, and also we're waking up to a whole new consciousness of what it means to be humans. We have the opportunity to truly evolve into a species that's deeply connected with this planet. And we have a history of having those relationships, so we know what that's like as indigenous people and throughout most of our 200,000 year history.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like this is new to us, but we forgot about it for a long time. So it's a reawakening, a revitalization of what it means to be humans, and what a great time to be alive and participate in this. I just encourage everyone to participate, you know, do what you most want to do with your life, but do it in a way that participates in this beautiful movement.
And dream a new dream for the world and take action for that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. So again, how do people connect to you?
JohnPerkins.org. That's the best way.
Yes.
I'm on Facebook and on everything else, but you can start at JohnPerkins.org and that will take you to whatever you want. All the books are there. The trips are there. You can sign up for my newsletter. You'll know where I'm going to be speaking next. And maybe it's in your town and we can get together. I'd like to meet some of your audience face to face.
Yeah. So thank you so much, John Perkins. And this is Gail West, and I am the guest of, or the host, excuse me, of the Cafe of Delights. Tune in every second and fourth Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific, or you can get me on Spotify, YouTube, and all the other podcast channels. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to Cafe of Delights, conversations that enlighten and inspire with me, your host, Gail West. Listen or watch live every second and fourth Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific on transformationtalkradio.com for a series of riveting interviews from those who are actively working at the edges of local, regional, and global transformation. From science to spirituality, culture, arts, and new economies, and more, we will explore how to create a world where all can thrive. For more information on hope for a new reality, visit me, Gail West, at successwithsoul.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers.